the bed to grab my half-empty glass of water.
"You will soon,"
he laughs, and I join him. I doubt it. I think of the two women who were gossiping in the break room at Vance. Each time I saw them this week, they seemed to be laughing to themselves, and I can't help but think they were laughing at me. I really am sorry it took me so long to call.
"Tessa, it's okay. Stop apologizing. You do that too much."
"Sorry," I say, and lightly smack my palm against my forehead. Both that waiter Robert and Zed have said that I apologize too much. Maybe they're right.
"Do you think you'll come visit anytime soon? Or are we still not able to be friends?"
he asks softly. "We can be friends," I remark, "but I have no clue when I'll be able to come visit. Truthfully, I'd been wanting to go back home this weekend. I miss Hardin and the trafficless streets further east. But wait, why did I just call it home? I only lived there 6 months." And then I realize, Hardin. It's because of Hardin. Wherever he is will always feel like home to me.
"Well, that's too bad. Maybe I'll make a trip to Seattle soon. I have some friends there,"
Zed says.
"Would that be okay?"
he asks after a few seconds. "Oh yeah, of course."
"Okay."
He laughs.
"I'm flying down to Florida to see my parents this weekend. I'm running late for my flight, actually. But maybe I could try next weekend or something?"
"Yeah, sure, just let me know. Have fun in Florida," I say just before I hang up. I put the phone down on my stack of notes, and mere seconds later it vibrates. Hardin's name appears on the screen, and taking a deep breath and ignoring the flutter in my chest, I answer.
"What are you doing?"
he asks immediately. Nothing.
"Where are you?"
"Kim and Christian's house." "Where are you?" I sarcastically respond.
"Home,"
he says matter-of-factly.
"Where else would I be?"
"I don't know. The gym?" Hardin has been consistently going to the gym every day all week.
"I just left there. Now I'm home."
"How was it, Captain Brevity?"
"Same,"
he curtly remarks. "Is something wrong?" I ask him.
"No, I'm fine. How was your day?"
He's quick to change the subject, and I wonder why, but I don't want to push him, not with the phone call to Zed weighing on my chest already. "It was okay. Long, I guess. I still don't like my political science class," I groan.
"I told you to drop it already. You can take another class for your social science elective,"
he reminds me. I lie back on my bed. "I know. I'll be okay."
"Are you staying in tonight?"
he asks, warning clear in his voice. "Yeah, I'm already in my pajamas."
"Good,"
he says, which makes me roll my eyes. "I called Zed just a few minutes ago," I blurt. "Might as well get it over with." Silence looms on the line, and I wait patiently for Hardin's breathing to slow.
"You what?"
he says sharply. "I called him to thank him for last weekend."
"Why, though? I thought we were..."
I can hear him barely controlling his anger as he breathes heavily into the receiver.
"Tessa, I thought we were working on our problems."
"We are, but I owed it to him. If he hadn't shown up when he did..."
"I know,"
Hardin snaps, like he's trying to keep something at bay. I don't want to argue with him, but I can't expect anything to change if I keep things from him. "He said he was thinking about visiting," I say.
"He's not coming there. End of discussion."
"Hardin..."
"Tessa, no. He isn't. I'm doing my best here, okay? I'm trying really fucking hard not to lose my shit right now, so the least you can do is help me out on this."
I sigh in defeat. Okay. Spending time with Zed can't possibly end well for anyone, Zed included. I can't lead him on again. It's not fair to him, and I don't think he and I will ever be able to have a strictly platonic relationship. Not in Hardin's eyes, or really in Zed's own.
"Thank you. Now if it were always that easy to get you to comply..."
"What? I will never just comply, Hardin. That's..."
"Easy. Easy. I'm just teasing. No need to get all testy,"
he says quickly.
"Anything else I should know about while you're at it?"
"No."
"Good. Now tell me what's been happening on that shitty radio station you've become obsessed with."
And as I go into detail about a woman who was looking for her long-lost love from high school while she was pregnant with her neighbor's child, the lurid details of the story and the scandal that ensues have me animated and laughing. By the time I mention the cat, Mazzy, I'm laughing hysterically. I tell him how it would be hard to be in love with one man while pregnant with another man's child, and he doesn't agree. Of course he believes the man and woman brought the scandal upon themselves, and teases me for getting so involved in talk radio. Hardin laughs along with my story, and I close my eyes and pretend that he's lying next to me.
Chapter 82. Hardin.
I'm sorry, Richard says with a ragged breath. A layer of sweat has coated his entire body as he wipes his vomit from his chin. I lean against the doorframe and debate whether or not to walk away, leaving him in his own filth. He's been doing this all day, vomiting, shaking, sweating, whining.
It will be out of my system soon.
He leans back over the toilet and expels more vomit, like a geyser. Fucking great. At least he made it to the toilet this time. Hope so, I say and leave the bathroom. I open the window in the kitchen, allowing the cold breeze to waft in, and grab a clean glass from the cabinet. The sink creaks as I turn the faucet to fill the glass, and I shake my head. What the hell am I supposed to do with him? He's detoxing all over my goddamn bathroom. With one last sigh, I take the glass of water and a sleeve of crackers into the bathroom and place them on the rim of the sink. I tap his shoulder. Eat these. He nods in acknowledgement, or from delirium tremens, and or withdrawal. His skin is so pale and clammy, it reminds me of clay. I don't actually think eating crackers will help him, but the possibility is there.
Thanks,
he finally groans, and I leave him alone again to vomit all over my bathroom. This bedroom, my bedroom, isn't the same without her. The bed is never made correctly when I climb into it at night. I've tried time and time again to tuck the corners of the sheet under the mattress the way Tessa does, but it's just not possible. My clothes, clean and dirty, are scattered across the floor. Empty water bottles and soda cans clutter the end tables. And it's cold. The heat is on, but the room is just cold. I send her one last text message to wish her good night and close my eyes, praying for a dreamless sleep, for once. Tessa! I call from the hallway, announcing that I'm home. The apartment is quiet. Only soft sounds fill the air. Is Tessa on the phone with someone? Tessa! I call again and turn the bedroom doorknob. The sight that greets my eyes stops me dead in my tracks. Tessa is sprawled out on the white duvet, her blonde hair matted to her forehead with sweat, the fingers of one hand gripping the headboard and a fistful of raven hair in the other. As she rocks her hips, I can feel ice replacing the hot blood pumping through my veins. Zed's head is buried between her creamy thighs. His hands roam her body. I try to move toward them to grab him by his throat and throw him against the wall, but my feet are frozen to the ground. I try to scream at them, but my mouth refuses to open.
Oh, Zed,
Tessa moans. I cover my ears with my hands, but it doesn't help. Her voice travels straight to my brain. There's no escaping it.
You're so beautiful,
he coos, and she moans again. One of his hands travels up to her chest, and he runs his fingertips over her while his mouth is pressed against her. I'm frozen. They don't see me. They haven't even noticed that I'm in the room. Tessa calls out his name once more, and when his head lifts from between her thighs, he finally sees me. He keeps eye contact with me while his lips run up her body to her jaw, nipping along the way. My eyes won't leave their naked bodies, and my insides have been ripped from my body and tossed onto the cold floor. I can't bear to watch this, but I'm forced to do so anyway.
I love you, he says to her while smirking at me.
I love you too,
Tessa whimpers. She rakes her nails down his tattooed back as he thrusts into her. Finally, my voice comes as a scream, silencing their moans.
Fuck!
I scream out and grab the glass from the nightstand. With a crash, it shatters against the wall.
Chapter 83. Harden. I'm pacing back and forth across the floor, furious fingers tugging at my sweat-soaked hair, all the clothes and books I'm stepping on registering vividly on the soles of my bare feet.
Harden, are you okay?
Tessa's voice is thick with sleep. I'm so glad she answered. I need her to be here with me, even through a telephone line. I don't know. I croak into the phone.
What's wrong?
Are you in bed? I ask her.
Yes, it's 3 in the morning. Where else would I be? What's wrong, Harden?
I just can't sleep, that's all, I admit, staring into the darkness of my room.
Oh,
she lets out a long breath of relief.
I was worried for a second.
Did you talk to Zed again? I ask her.
What? No, I haven't talked to him since I told you about him wanting to visit.
Call him and tell him that he can't. I sound like a lunatic, but I don't give a shit.
I'm not calling him this late. What's gotten into you?
She's being so defensive, though I suppose I can't blame her.
Nothing, Tessa. Never mind.
I sigh.
Harden, what's going on?
She asks, clearly worried.
Nothing, just nothing.
I hang up the phone and press down on the power button until the screen turns black.
Chapter 84. Tessa. You're not staying in your pajamas the entire day again, are you? Kimberly asks the next morning when she sees me sitting at the kitchen counter. I spoon a mouthful of granola into my mouth, so I'm unable to answer her, because that's exactly what I planned to do today. I didn't sleep well after Harden's phone call. He has since sent a few text messages, none of them mentioning his odd behavior last night. I want to call him, but the way he hung up so quickly makes me think better of it. Besides, I haven't paid much attention to Kimberly since I arrived. Most of my free time has been spent talking on the phone with Harden or doing my first round of assignments for my new classes. The least I can do is chat with her over breakfast. You never wear clothes, Smith chimes in, and I nearly spit the granola out onto the table. Yes, I do, I reply, my mouth still full. You're right, Smith, she doesn't, Kimberly cackles, and I roll my eyes at her. At that moment, Christian enters the room and places a kiss against her temple. Smith smiles at his father and soon-to-be stepmother before looking back to me. Pajamas are more comfortable, I tell him, and he nods in agreement. His green eyes look down at himself, taking in his Spider-Man print pajamas. Do you like Spider-Man? I ask, wanting to start a conversation that isn't about me. His small fingers pick at his toast. No. No. You're wearing those, I reply, and point to his clothing. She bought them. He nods toward Kim. Then he whispers, Don't tell her I hate them. She'll cry. I laugh. Smith is 5 going on 20. I won't, I promise him, and we finish the meal in comfortable silence.
Chapter 85. Harden. Landon shakes the moisture from his hat onto the floor and rests his closed umbrella against the wall in an exaggerated and theatrical way. He wants me to see what an effort he's making to help me out.
Well, what was so urgent that I had to come here in the freezing rain?
He asks, half smug, half concerned. Looking at my bare chest, he adds,
You know, the thing that I actually put clothes on for and ran over to help out with? So what is it?
I wave toward Richard, who's spread out on the couch, asleep. Him. Landon leans to one side to look around me.
Who is that?
He asks. Then straightening, he looks at me with a gaping mouth.
Wait, is that Tessa's father?
I roll my eyes at his question.
No, it's another random homeless fuck that I let sleep on my couch. It's what all the hipsters are doing nowadays. He ignores my sarcasm. Why is he here? Does Tessa know? Yes, she knows. However, she doesn't know that he's been going through withdrawal for the last 5 days and vomiting all over the damn place. Richard groans in his sleep, and I grab Landon by the sleeve of his plaid shirt and pull him into the hallway. This is clearly a little out of my stepbrother's league. Withdrawal? He asks. From, like, drugs? Yes, and alcohol. He seems to ponder this for a second. He hasn't found your liquor yet? He asks, then raises a brow at me. Or has he already consumed it? I don't have any liquor here anymore, Dick. He peers back around the corner to the sleeping man perched on my couch. I still don't see how I fit into this. You're going to babysit him, I inform him, and he immediately takes a step back.
No way!
He tries to whisper, but his voice comes out much more like a hushed scream.
Chill.
I pat his shoulder. It's only for one night.
No way. I'm not staying here with him. I don't even know him.
Neither do I, I counter.
You know him better than I do. He would be your father-in-law someday if you weren't such an idiot.
Landon's words hit me harder than they should. Father-in-law? The title sounds odd when I repeat it in my mind, while I'm staring at this gross lump of man on my couch. I want to see her, I plead.
Who? Tess?
Yes, Tessa, I correct him. Who else? Landon starts playing with his fingers like a nervous child.
Well, why can't she come here? I don't think it's a good idea for me to stay with him.
Don't be such a pussy. He's not dangerous or anything, I say. Just make sure he doesn't leave the apartment. There's plenty of food and water here.
You sound like you're talking about a dog, Landon remarks.
I rub my temples in annoyance. Dude might as well be at this point. Are you going to help me or not? He glares at me, and I add, for Tessa? It's a low blow, but I know it will work. After a second, he breaks and nods.
One night only,
he agrees, and I turn away from him to hide my smile. I don't know how Tessa will react to me ignoring our space agreement, but it's only one night. One short night with her is what I need right now. I need her. Phone calls and text messages are sufficient enough during the week, but after that nightmare I had, I need to see her more than anything. I need to confirm the fact that her body holds no marks that were put on it by anyone other than myself.
Does she know you're coming?
Landon asks me as he follows me into the bedroom, where I search the floor for a t-shirt to pull over my bare torso.
She will once I arrive, won't she? She told me about you two on the phone.
She did? That's really unlike her.
Why would she tell you about us getting off over the phone?
I wonder. Landon's eyes go wide.
Whoa, what? I wasn't... Oh, God.
He groans. He tries to cover his ears, but it's too late. His cheeks turn a deep red, and my laughter fills the bedroom.
You have to be more specific when you're talking about Tessa and me. Don't you know that by now?
I grin, relishing the memory of her moans coming through the line.
Apparently I do.
He scowls and regroups.
I meant that you two have been talking a lot on the phone.
And
does she seem happy to you?
My smile disappears. Why do you ask? Worry spreads over his features.
I'm just wondering. I'm a little worried about her. She doesn't seem as excited and happy about Seattle as I assumed she'd be.
I don't know. I rub my hand over the back of my neck. She doesn't sound happy, it's true. But I can't tell if it's because I'm an asshole or because she doesn't like Seattle as much as she thought she would. I answer truthfully.
I hope it's the first. I want her to be happy there, Landon says.
So do I, sort of, I say.
Landon kicks a dirty pair of black jeans out from under his foot.
Hey, I was going to wear those, I snap, and bend down to grab them.
Don't you have any clean clothes?
Not at the moment.
Have you done any laundry at all since she left?
Yes, I lie.
Uh-huh.
He points to the stain on my black T-shirt. Mustard, maybe? Shit. I pull the shirt off and toss it back onto the floor. I don't have shit to wear. I pull out the bottom drawer of the dresser and let out a relieved breath when I spot a stack of clean black T-shirts in the back.
What about these?
Landon points to a pair of dark blue jeans hanging in the closet.
No. Why not?
You never wear anything other than black jeans.
Exactly, I retort.
Well, the only pair of pants you seem to have to wear is dirty, so
I have 5 pairs, I correct him. They just happen to be the same exact style.
With a huff, I reach past him into the closet and pull the blue jeans off of the hanger. I hate these fucking things. My mum bought them for me for Christmas, and I vowed to never wear them. Yet here I am, for true love or something. She'd probably swoon.
They're a little snug.
Landon bites down on his bottom lip to keep from laughing.
Fuck off,
I say and raise my middle finger, then finish shoving shit into my bag. 20 minutes later, we're back in the living room. Richard is still asleep. Landon is still making obnoxious remarks about my fucking tight jeans, and I'm ready to go see Tessa in Seattle.
What should I tell him when he wakes up?
He asks.
Whatever you want.
It would be quite funny if you fucked with him for a little while.
You could pretend you're me or that you don't know why he's there.
I laugh.
He would be so confused.
Landon doesn't see the humor in my idea, and he basically pushes me out the door.
Be careful driving. The roads are slick,
he warns.
Gotcha.
I hoist my bag over my shoulder and leave before he can make another mushy-ass remark. During the drive, I can't help but think about my nightmare. It was so clear, so fucking vivid. I could hear Tessa moaning that asshole's name. I could even hear her nails running along his skin. I turn the radio up to drown out my thoughts, but it doesn't work. I decide to think of her instead, of memories of us together, to stop the images from haunting me. Otherwise, this will be the longest drive of my entire life.
Look how cute those babies are,
Tessa had squealed while pointing to a platoon of squirming little beings. Well, only 2 babies, actually, but still.
Yeah, yeah, so cute.
I rolled my eyes and dragged her along through the store.
They even have matching bows in their hair.
She was smiling so big, and her voice did that weird high-pitched thing that women do when they're around small children and some hormone or other kicks in.
Yep,
I said, and continued behind her down the narrow aisle at Connor's. She'd been searching for some specific cheese she needed to make our dinner that night, but babies overtook her brain.
Admit that they were cute.
She beamed up at me, and I shook my head in defiance.
Come on, Harden. You know they were cute. Just say it.
They were cute, I responded flatly, and she pressed her mouth into a hard line while she crossed her arms over her chest like a petulant child herself.
Maybe you'll turn out to be one of those people who only thinks their own kids are cute, she said,
and I watched as a dawning recognition quickly stole her smile away.
That is, if you ever want kids,
she added somberly, making me want to kiss away the frown on her beautiful face.
Sure, maybe. Too bad I don't want them, though,
I said, trying to drill the statement permanently into her head.
I know,
she said softly. Soon thereafter, she found the item she was so avidly searching for and dropped it into the basket with a dull thud. Her smile still hadn't returned by the time we were waiting in the checkout line. I looked down and gently nudged with my elbow. "Hey!" When she looked up at me, her eyes were dim, and she was obviously waiting for me to speak. "I know we agreed not to talk about kids anymore," I started as she focused her eyes on the floor. "Hey!" I repeated, and set the basket on the floor next to my boot. "Look at me." Both of my hands covered her cheeks, and I pressed my forehead against hers.
"It's okay. I wasn't really thinking when I said that," she admitted with a shrug.
I watched as she glanced around the small market, taking in our surroundings, and I could practically see her wondering why I was touching her this way in public.
"Well then, let's agree again not to bring up children. It does nothing but cause problems between us,"
I said and gave her a quick kiss to her lips, followed by another. My lips lingered on hers, and her small hands pushed into the pockets of my jacket.
"I love you, Harden,"
she said, when Grumpy Gloria, the cashier we'd laughed about many times, cleared her throat.
"I love you, Tess. I will love you enough that you won't even need children," I promised her.
She turned away from me to hide her frown, I know. But right then I didn't care, because I figured the question was settled, and I'd gotten what I wanted. As I continued to drive, I begin to wonder, has there ever been a time in my life when I wasn't a selfish prick?
Chapter 86. Tessa. As I'm plodding from my room to the couch with a copy of Wuthering Heights in hand, Kimberly says with a beautiful wide smile, "You're in a funk, Tessa, and as your friend and mentor, it's my responsibility to get you out of it." Her blonde hair is straight and glossy, and her makeup is too perfect. She's one of those women that other women love to hate. "Mentor? Really?" I giggle, and she rolls her heavily shadowed eyes. "Okay, maybe not so much of a mentor, but a friend," she corrects herself. "I'm not in a funk, I just have a lot of coursework to do, and I just don't feel like going anywhere tonight," I say. "You are 19, girl. Act like it. When I was 19, I was out all the time. I barely showed up for any of my classes. I dated boys. Many, many boys." Her heel taps on the concrete floor.
"Did you now?"
Christian cuts in as he enters the room. He's unwrapping some sort of tape from around his hands. "None as wonderful as you, of course." Kim winks at him, and he laughs. He grins.
"That's what I get for dating such a young woman. I have to compete with still-fresh memories of college-age men."
His green eyes shine with humor. "Hey, I'm not that much younger than you," she says with a smack to his chest.
12 years,
he points out. Kimberly rolls her eyes. "Yes, but you're a young soul, unlike Tessa here, who behaves as if she's 40.
"Sure, honey."
He tosses the used tape into a waste paper basket.
"Now go on and enlighten the girl about how not to behave during college."
He gives her one last smile, smacks her on the ass, and disappears, leaving her grinning from ear to ear. "I love that man so much," she tells me, and I nod along because I know it's true. "I really wanted you to come along with us tonight. Christian and his partners just opened a new jazz club downtown. It's beautiful. And I'm sure you'd have an amazing time." "Christian owns a jazz club?" I ask. "He invested in it, so he didn't actually do any work," she whispers with a sly smile. "They have guest musicians on Saturdays, sort of an open mic type thing." I shrug. "Maybe next weekend? The last thing I want to do right now is get dressed and go out to any type of club." "Fine, next weekend. I'm holding you to that. Smith doesn't want to come either. I've tried to convince him, but you know how he is. He lectured me on how jazz is nothing compared to classical music," she laughs. "So his sitter will be here in a few hours." "I can watch him," I offer. "I'll be here anyway."
"No, honey, you don't have to."
"I know, but I want to."
"Well, it would be kind of great, and so much easier.
He He doesn't like the sitter for some reason. He doesn't like me either, I laugh. True, but he talks to you more than he does to most people. She looks down at the engagement ring on her finger and then up to Smith's school portrait hanging over the mantel. He's such a sweet boy. Just very guarded, she says quietly, almost as an afterthought. A doorbell sounds, breaking the moment. Kimberly looks at me quizzically. Now who the heck would be coming here in the middle of the afternoon, she asks, as if I could possibly know the answer. I stand there, looking at a really cute picture of Smith on the wall. He's such a serious little kid, like a little engineer or mathematician almost. Well, well, well. Look who it is, Kimberly calls from the door. When I turn to see what she's talking about, my mouth falls open. Hardin! His name falls from my lips without a single thought, and an immediate surge of adrenaline at the sight of him propels me across the room. My socks make me slide on the hardwood floor, nearly causing me to fall on my face. Once I'm steady enough to continue, I latch myself onto him, hugging him tighter than maybe I ever have before.
Chapter 87. Hardin. I nearly have a goddamned heart attack when Tessa stumbles and starts to fall, but she quickly collects herself and hurls herself into my arms. This is sure as hell not the reaction I had expected. I thought I would be granted with an uncomfortable hello and a smile that didn't meet her eyes. But man, was I wrong. Very wrong. Tessa tightens her arms around my neck, and I bury my head in her hair. The sweet scent of her shampoo fills my senses, and I'm momentarily overwhelmed by her presence, warm and welcoming in my arms. "Hi," I finally say, and she glances up at me.
"You're freezing,"
she remarks. Her hands move to my cheeks, instantly heating them. "It's freezing rain out there, and it's worse back home. My home, I mean," I correct myself. Her eyes quickly dart to the floor before looking back up at me.
"What are you doing here?"
She practically whispers to me, trying her best to shield the question from our company. "I called Christian on the way up," I inform Kimberly, who continues to faux glare at me, a smirk playing on her painted lips.
"Couldn't stay away, could you?"
she mouths to me behind Tessa's back. That woman is the biggest ballbuster around. I'm not sure how Christian puts up with her, and willingly at that.
"You can stay in the room across from Tessa's. She can show you,"
Kimberly announces and then disappears. I detach myself from Tessa and give her a little smile.
I'm sorry,
Tessa stutters, looking around the room and blushing.
"I don't know why I did that. It's just nice to see a familiar face."
"It's good to see you too," I tell her, trying to free her of her embarrassment. It's not like I let go because I didn't want to hold her. Her lack of confidence always has her interpret things in negative ways.
"I slipped on the floor,"
she blurts out, then flushes again as I bite down on the inside of my cheek, trying my best not to laugh at her. "Yeah, I saw it." I can't help the small chuckle that escapes from me, and she shakes her head, laughing at herself.
"Are you really staying?"
she asks. "Yes, if that's okay with you." Her eyes are bright and a lighter shade of blue-gray than usual. Her hair is down, slightly wavy and unstyled. Not a trace of makeup mars her complexion, and she looks absolutely fucking perfect. The number of hours that I've spent picturing her face in front of me did not adequately prepare me for the moment when I'm finally able to look at her again. My mind can't possibly catch all of her, all the details. The freckle just below her neckline, the curve of her lips, the brilliance of her eyes. It's fucking impossible. Her t-shirt hangs loose on her body, and those hideous fluffy cloud pants cover her legs. She keeps adjusting her shirt, tugging it down, playing with the collar. She's the only girl I've ever seen who can manage to wear these ugly-ass clothes to bed, but somehow still looks so damn sexy.
Through the white shirt, I can see her black bra. She's wearing that black lace one that I love. I wonder if she's aware that I can see right through her shirt.
What changed your mind? And where's the rest of your stuff?
Tessa asks as she leads me down the hallway.
Everyone else's rooms are upstairs,
she informs me, unaware of my perverted thoughts. Or maybe she's not. This is all I brought. It's only for one night, I tell her, and she stops in front of me.
You're only staying one night,
she says, her eyes searching my face. Yeah, what did you think? That I was moving here? Of course she did. She always has too much faith in me.
No.
She looks away.
I don't know. I thought a little longer than that, though.
And now this is where it gets awkward. I knew it would.
Here's the room.
She opens the door for me, but I don't step inside. Your room is just across the hall? My voice breaks and I sound like a damned fool.
Yeah.
She mutters, looking down at her fingers. Cool, I remark dumbly. You're sure it's okay that I'm here, right?
Yes, of course. You know I missed you.
The excitement on her face seems to vanish as the memory of my previous actions, being an asshole in general and refusing to come to Seattle specifically, looms unspoken over our heads. I'll never forget the way she ran to me. Literally, when she saw me at the door. There was such emotion on her face, so much longing, and I felt it, too, more than she did. I've been insane without her. Yeah, but the last time that we saw one another in that apartment, I was basically kicking you out. I watch her face change as my words remind her of what took place. I can literally see the fucking wall rising up between us as she gives me a fake smile. I don't know why I brought that up, I say, and wipe my wrist across my forehead. Her eyes move to another room, her room. Then turning to the door we're standing in front of, she says,
You can put your stuff in here.
Grabbing my bag from me, she heads inside and unzips it on the bed. I watch as she pulls the wadded-up T-shirts and boxers out of the bag and scrunches her nose.
Are these clean?
She asks. I shake my head. The boxes are. She holds the bag at arm's length.
I don't even want to know what the apartment looks like.
The corners of her mouth lift into a smug smile. Good thing you won't ever see it again, then. I tease her. Her smile fades.
What a shitty joke. What the fuck is wrong with me?
I didn't mean it that way, I say quickly. Desperate to recover from my poor choice of words.
It's fine. Relax, okay?
Her voice is gentle.
It's only me, Harden.
I know. I take a deep breath and continue. It just feels like it's been so fucking long, and we're in that weird middle half relationship shit that we are really shitty at, and we haven't seen each other, and I've just missed you, and I hope you missed me, too. Wow, I really said that all way too fast. She smiles.
I did.
You did what? I press for the exact words.
I missed you. I told you that every day we've talked.
I know. I step closer to her. I just wanted to hear it again. I reach out and tuck her hair behind her ears, using both hands, and she leans into me.
When did you get here?
A small voice suddenly says, and Tessa jumps away from me. Great. Just fucking great. And there's Smith, standing in the doorway of Tessa's new bedroom. Just now, I reply, hoping that he'll leave the room so I can continue what almost was started moments ago.
Why did you come?
He asks and enters the room. I point to Tessa, who is now more than 5 feet away from me, pulling my clothes out of my bag and gathering them in her arms. I came to see her.
Oh,
he quietly replies, staring down at his feet. Do you not want me here? I inquire.
I don't mind,
he says with a shrug, and I smile at him. Good, because I wouldn't have left if you did.
I know.
Smith smiles back and leaves Tessa and me alone. Thank fucking God.
He likes you,
Tessa says. He's okay. I shrug, and she laughs.
You like him too,
she accuses.
No, I don't.
I said simply, he's okay. She rolls her eyes.
Sure.
She's right. I do sort of like him. More than any other 5-year-old that I've ever met, at least.
I'm watching him tonight while Kim and Christian go to the club opening, she says.
Why aren't you going along?
I don't know. I just didn't want to.
Hmm. I pinch my lips between my fingers to hide my smile from her. I'm thrilled that she didn't want to go out, and I find myself hoping that she'd planned on spending her evening talking to me on the phone. Tessa gives me a weird look.
You can go if you'd like. You don't have to stay in with me.
I give her an indignant look.
What?
I didn't drive all this way to go out to some shitty club without you. You don't want me to stay with you? Her eyes meet mine, and she presses my clothes to her chest.
Yes, of course I want you to stay.
Good, because I wouldn't have left if you didn't, I joke. She doesn't smile the way Smith did, but she does roll her eyes, which is just as cute. Where are you going? I ask when I notice her inching toward the door with my things. She gives me a look that's both funny and sultry.
To do your laundry, she says,
and disappears into the hall.
Chapter 88. Tessa. My thoughts are racing as I start the washing machine. Hardin came here to Seattle, and I didn't have to ask or beg him. He came of his own accord. Even if it's only for one night, it means so much to me, and I hope that it will turn out to be a step in the right direction for us. I'm still so conflicted when it comes to our relationship. We always have so many problems, so many pointless fights. We're such different people, and I'm at a point now where I'm not sure it will ever work. But right now, now that he's here with me, I want nothing more than to try this long-distance, half-relationship, half-friendship, and see where it takes us.
I knew he'd show up, Kimberly says from behind me.
When I turn around, I see her leaning against the doorframe of the laundry room. I didn't, I tell her. She gives me an oh-please look.
You had to know he would. I've never seen a couple like the two of you.
I sigh. We aren't exactly a couple.
You ran into his arms like something out of a movie. He's been here for less than 15 minutes and you're already doing his laundry.
She nods to the machine. Well, his clothes are filthy, I say, ignoring the first part of her remark.
You two just can't stay away from one another. It's really something to watch. I do wish you were coming out tonight so you could get dressed up and show him what he's missing by not being here in Seattle with you.
She winks and then leaves me alone in the laundry room. She's right about Hardin and me not being able to stay away from each other. It's always been that way since the day I met him. Even when I tried to convince myself that I didn't want him, I couldn't ignore the fluttering I felt inside me every time we ran into each other. Back then, Hardin always seemed to appear wherever I was. Granted, I did go to his fraternity house every chance I could. I hated it there, but something inside me drew me to the place, knowing that if I went, I would see him. I didn't admit it then, not even to myself, but I longed for his company even when he was being cruel to me. The memories feel so ancient and almost dreamlike as I recall the way he used to stare at me during class, then roll his eyes when I said hello. The washing machine makes a random little beep, bringing me back to reality, and I hurry down the hallway to the guest room that has been designated as Hardin's for the night. The room is empty. Hardin's empty bag is still on the bed, but he's nowhere to be found. I walk across the hall and find him standing over the desk in my room. His fingertips are tracing the cover of one of my notebooks. What are you doing in here? I ask.
I just wanted to see where you're living now. I wanted to see your room.
Oh. I notice the way his brows pull together when he calls it my room.
Is this for a class?
He asks, holding up the black leather notebook. It's for creative writing, I nod at him. Did you read it? I can't help but feel a little nervous at the thought that he may have. I've only completed one assignment so far, but like everything else in my life, it ended up relating to him.
A little.
It's just an assignment, I say, fumbling to explain myself. We were asked to do a freestyle essay as the first assignment and...
It's good. Really good.
He says, praising me, and places the book back on the desk for a moment before picking it up again and opening it to the first page.
Who I am.
He reads the first line out loud. Please don't, I beg. He gives me a questioning little smirk.
Since when are you shy about showing your schoolwork?
I'm not. It's just... That piece is personal. I'm not even sure if I want to turn it in.
I read your religion journal,
he says, and my heart stops. What? I pray that I heard him wrong. He wouldn't. He couldn't have read it.
I read it. You left it at the apartment, and I found it.
This is humiliating. I stand in silence while Hardin stares at me from across the room. Those were private thoughts that I never expected anyone to read, except my professor, maybe. I'm mortified that Hardin pored over my deepest thoughts. You weren't supposed to read those. Why would you? I ask, trying not to look at him.
Every entry was about me,
he says, by way of defending himself. That's not the point, Hardin. My stomach is in my throat, making it hard to breathe. I was going through a really bad time, and those were private thoughts from my journal. You were never meant to...
They were really good, Tess. So good. It hurt me to read the way you were feeling, but the words, what you had to say, it was perfect.
I know he's trying to compliment me, but it only embarrasses me further. How would you feel if I read something you wrote to express your feelings in a private way? I ignore the compliments from him about my writing. His eyes flash with panic, and I tilt my head in confusion. What?
Nothing,
is all he says, shaking his head.
Chapter 89. Hardin. The look in her eyes almost makes me stop, but I have to be honest, and I want her to know how interesting I found her writing. I've read it at least 10 times, I admit. Her wide eyes don't meet mine, but her lips part slightly, and she replies,
You have?
Don't be ashamed. It's only me, remember? I smile at her, and she steps closer to me.
I know, but I probably sounded so pathetic. I wasn't thinking clearly when I was writing them.
I press my fingers against her lips to silence her.
No, you didn't. They were brilliant. I...
She tries to speak beneath my fingers, and I press them harder.
Are you done yet?
I grin at her, and she nods. Slowly I remove my fingers from her lips, and her tongue darts out to wet them. I can't help but stare.
I have to kiss you,
I whisper. Our faces mere inches apart. Her eyes look into mine, and she swallows loudly before licking her lips again.
Okay,
she whispers back to me. Her hands are greedy as she wraps her fists around the fabric of my shirt. She pulls me closer, her breathing heavy. Just before our lips can connect, a knock sounds at the bedroom door.
Tessa!
Kimberly's high-pitched voice calls through the half-open door.
Get rid of her,
I whisper, and Tessa backs away from me. First the kid, now his mom. We might as well invite Vance to join as well.
We're leaving in a few minutes,
Kimberly says without coming in.
Good for you. Now get the fuck out of here.
Okay, I'll be right out,
Tessa responds. My irritation grows.
Thanks, hon,
Kimberly says and walks off, humming some pop song. I shouldn't have even fucking... I begin. When Tessa looks over at me, I stop myself from finishing my rude remark. It wasn't true, anyway. Nothing could keep me from wanting to be here right now.
I have to go out there now to watch Smith. If you want to stay in here, you can.
No, I want to be wherever you are, I tell her, and she smiles. Fuck, I want to kiss her. I've missed her so much, and she says she's missed me too. Why doesn't she just... Her hands wrap around the top of my black T-shirt, and she presses her lips against mine. I feel as if someone has plugged me into an electrical outlet, every fiber of me igniting and buzzing. Her tongue enters my mouth, pressing and caressing, and I wrap my hands around her hips. I pull her across the room until my feet hit the footboard of the bed. I lie back, and she falls gently on top of me. Wrapping her body into my arms, I turn us over so her body is under mine. I can feel her pulse hammering under my lips as they slide down her neckline and back up to the sweet spot just under her ear. Gasps and quiet moans are my reward. Slowly, I begin what I know are torturing movements, grinding my hips against hers, pressing her into the mattress. Tessa's fingers move to touch the heated skin under my T-shirt, and her nails rake down my back. As I bring my earlobe between my lips, the image of Zed thrusting into her flashes through my mind, and I'm on my feet within seconds.
"What's wrong?"
she asks. Her lips are deep pink and swollen from my gentle assault.
It's nothing. We should, go out there. Take care of the little shit,"
I respond frantically.
"Harden,"
she presses.
"Tessa, let it go. It's nothing."
"Oh, you know, just that I dreamed of Zed fucking you practically through to the other side of our mattress, and now I can't stop picturing it."
"Okay."
She lifts herself from the bed and wipes her hands against the soft material of her pajamas. I close my eyes for a moment, trying to rid my mind of the disgusting images. If that poser asshole interrupts another second of my time with Tessa, I'll break every bone in his goddamned body.
Chapter 90. Tessa. After too many kisses for Smith's liking, Kimberly and Vance finally leave. Each of the three times they reminded us they were only a phone call away in case there's trouble, Harden and Smith rolled their eyes dramatically. When she pointed to the list of emergency numbers on the kitchen counter, they shared a little cute look of disbelief. "What do you want to watch?" I ask Smith once their car is out of sight. He shrugs from where he's sitting on the couch and looks up at Harden, who looks down at the kid like he's an amusing little ferret or something. "Okay, what about a game? Do you want to play a game or something?" I suggest when neither of them speaks. "No," Smith replies.
"I think he just wants to go back to his room and do whatever the hell he was doing before Kim dragged him out here,"
Harden says, and Smith nods curtly in agreement. "Well, okay then. You can go back to your room, Smith. Harden and I will be out here if you need anything. I'll be ordering dinner soon," I tell him. "Can you come with me, Harden?" Smith asks in the softest tone possible.
"To your room? No, I'm good."
Without a word, Smith climbs down from the couch and walks over to the stairs. I shoot a glare at Harden, and he shrugs his shoulders.
"What?"
"Go to his room with him," I whisper.
"I don't want to go to his room. I want to be out here with you,"
he says matter-of-factly. As much as I want Harden to stay with me, I feel bad for Smith. "Come on." I nod to the blonde boy as he slowly ascends the steps. "He's lonely."
"Damn it, fine."
Harden groans and sulks across the living room to follow Smith up the stairs. I'm still a little bothered by his odd reaction to our kiss in the bedroom. I thought it was going great. Better than great. But he climbed off me so abruptly that I thought he'd been injured. Maybe after being away from me for so long, he doesn't feel the same. Maybe he's not as attracted to me, sexually, as he once was. I know that I'm dressed in baggy pajamas, but he never had a problem with them before. Unable to come up with any reasonable explanation for his behavior, instead of letting my imagination run wild, I grab the small stack of takeout pamphlets that Kimberly left for us so we could figure out what to order for dinner. I decide on pizza and grab my phone before going into the laundry room. I place Harden's clothes in the dryer and sit on the bench in the center of the room. I call for the pizza and wait while watching the machine turn around and around.
Chapter 91. Harden. As Smith walks around his bedroom, I stand in the doorway and take a mental inventory of all the shit this kid has. Man, he's spoiled as hell. "What do you want to do?" I ask the kid as I step into the room.
"I don't know."
He stares at the wall. His blonde hair is combed to one side so perfectly it's almost creepy. "Then why did you want me to come up here?"
"I don't know,"
the little shit repeats. Stubborn little fucker. "Okay. Well, this isn't going anywhere." I trail off.
"Are you living here now, too, with your girl?"
Smith suddenly blurts. "No, only visiting for tonight," I say, and look away from the kid.
"Why?"
His eyes home in on me. I can feel them without even glancing his way. "Because I don't want to live here." I do, though, sort of.
"Why? You don't like her?"
he questions. "Yes, I like her," I laugh. "I just... I don't know. Why do you always ask me so many questions?"
"I don't know,"
he responds simply, and pulls some sort of train set from under his bed. "Don't you have any friends you can play with?" I ask the boy.
"No."
That doesn't seem right. He's an all right kid. "Why not?" He shrugs and disconnects a piece of the train track. His small hands disconnect another piece, and he switches the metal out with two new tracks from a box at the end of his bed. "I'm sure you can make friends at school."
"No, I can't."
"Are the kids assholes to you or something?" I ask him. I don't bother to correct my language. Vance has the mouth of a fucking sailor, and I'm sure his son has heard worse.
"Sometimes."
He twists the edges of some type of wire and connects a small train car to it. The wire sparks in his hands, but he doesn't flinch. Within seconds, the train begins to move around the track, starting slowly and then gradually picking up speed. "What was that that you just did?" I ask him.
"Made it go faster. It was really slow."
"No wonder you don't have any friends," I laugh. But then I catch myself. Shit. He's just sitting there, staring at his train. "I just meant because you're so smart. Sometimes smart people are terrible at being social, and no one likes them. Like Tessa, for example. She's too smart sometimes, and it makes people feel uncomfortable."
"Okay."
He looks over and begins staring at me, and I can't help but feel bad for him. I'm shit at giving advice, and I don't know why I even tried. I know what it's like to grow up not having any friends. As a child, I never had a single one until I hit puberty and started drinking, smoking pot, and hanging out with shitty people. They weren't actually my friends, anyway. They only liked me because I did whatever the fuck I wanted to do, and that was cool to them. They didn't enjoy reading the way that I did. They only enjoyed partying. I was always that angry little boy in the corner whom no one talked to because they were afraid of me. To this day, that hasn't changed much, really. But I met Tessa. She's the only person who genuinely gives a fuck about me. She's afraid of me sometimes, too, though. Images from Christmas and red wine splattered across her white cardigan bring my thoughts to life. I suspect that Landon cares for me too, I guess. But that's still a weird situation with him, and I'm pretty sure he only cares because of Tessa. She tends to have that power over people. Me, especially.
Chapter 92. Tessa. "Is your pizza good?" I ask Smith from across the table. He looks up at me, mouth full, and nods his head yes. His small hands are holding a fork and knife to cut into his meal. This doesn't surprise me. When his plate is clear, he stands from the table and walks his dishes to the dishwasher, placing them inside. "I'm going to retire for the night. I'm ready for bed," the little scientist announces. Hardin shakes his head in amusement over the mature